Basically, very soon after the establishment of Israel in 1948, there was a law put through in the Israeli Knesset, which is their parliament, to essentially allow any Jew who can prove that they're Jewish, after having health and safety checks, that they can be a Jewish, an Israeli citizen of Israel. And that was done to, in other words, give a sense that Israel was a homeland for the Jewish people of the world. The problem with it is, the fundamental problem with it is, that Palestinians who have as much, if not more, of a connection to the land than someone like I do, and I'm Jewish, can't have a right of return. They cannot return to their land. They can't get a Palestinian or Israeli passport. And this is, in my view, and many other people's view, a fundamentally racist situation, which is why we decided to start the petition. And also, growing numbers of Jews around the world are coming out and saying that this is yet one more example of why Israel is a racially discriminatory state, and we need to stand up and say so.
So how does the right of return law compare to the white Australian policy that we had in this country not long ago?
Interesting comparison. I mean, the way the right of return law works in Israel is, as long as you can prove that you're Jewish, the Jewish line goes through the mother. So if you can prove through documentation and other ways that you are Jewish, you basically, within a relatively short amount of time, can become an Israeli citizen. Now, the problem, I guess, with that is, compared to the white Australia policy, is that the Australian governments over successive generations restricted certain people from entering who happened not to be white or of certain backgrounds. So there are similarities, and obviously it was based on race, purely based on race. The difference is that white Australia policy has basically been abandoned. There are still, Australia is now a multicultural country with all those problems. There are many problems because of the situation that we have, but the fact is that Australia is a multi-ethnic country, which is a wonderful thing. Israel has many ethnic backgrounds too, but it is simply impossible to become an Israeli citizen if you're not Jewish. And I want to say one thing also about that. The also problem is that Israel, on the one hand, wants to be a Jewish state, but also a state for all its people. And you actually can't be both, because the truth is, in Israel itself, about 20% of the population are not Jewish. They're Israeli Arab and other minorities. And the question really is, those individuals don't feel particularly affectionate towards an Israeli Jewish state that doesn't recognise their difference. And the right of return, I think, signifies that problem.
Anthony, how does the right of return law affect Jews who convert to Christianity or Islam? How does the Jewish state deal with that, I guess?
As in those individuals who do it over there or do it in other parts of the world?
I guess both.
Well, it's interesting. Let me just answer that in a roundabout way. If, for example, you convert to Judaism in Australia, say, let's say you're Christian and you convert to Judaism, if you convert to Judaism with a liberal, so-called progressive system, many institutions in Israel do not recognise you as being Jewish. You need to essentially convert with an Orthodox, more conservative synagogue. The problem with that is, of course, that there are a number of Jews who, for example, are dying to move to Israel and live there, but in fact their conversion is not recognised. In terms of the other way around, I mean, there are obviously a number of individuals who Jews who become Muslims or become Christians. Ultimately, you will remain an Israeli citizen if you convert to another religion. If you're, say, born that way or otherwise, that'll happen. The only reason you would lose that citizenship is, like in many other countries, for security reasons or whatever it might be. But generally speaking, you won't lose it if you suddenly became Muslim or Christian. But at the same time, the question is more interesting when it's reversed. As I said before, when individuals want to become Israeli citizens, they must define themselves and must have the background of a certain kind of Judaism, which excludes liberal Jews and, for that matter, anybody else who wants to live in a so-called democratic state, which Israel, in my view, is not.
I wonder if you could comment on, in the 1970s, the UN declared Zionism to be a form of racism, only to revoke that declaration later in order to get Israel back to the negotiating table. Do you think the UN should reevaluate that decision?
Well, I do. I absolutely do. I think there are many people who are Zionist, Jewish and otherwise, who are not racist at all. I mean, of course, you can be Zionist and not believe in the concept of racial discrimination. The problem is that the implementation of Zionism, both in Israel proper and the occupied territories, is fundamentally racist, because if you're not Jewish, you are treated very differently. There is no doubt these days in 2010, it's been operating for many, many years, there isn't a system of apartheid to the point where there are often many roads constructed in the West Bank which only Israelis are allowed to drive on, certain paths only Israelis are allowed to drive on, resources are not shared equally, Jewish settlers have far more rights than Palestinians, etc., etc. So, you know, should the UN reevaluate that? In my view, yes. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but I think one of the things also that's important to note on this in this conflict is often how ineffective the UN actually has been. This, of course, is not unique to Israel-Palestine. The UN is a fundamentally flawed body. Let me preface it by saying I support the UN's existence. I'm just saying that on many conflicts, including Israel-Palestine, the nature of how power is divided in that in this world, with the US and others having disproportionate amount of influence, trying to force Israel to abide by the bare minimum of international law is often next to impossible. So the UN can't be the only way in which we try and do that.
Okay, I was having a look at one of your posts from today, I think it was, and you mentioned Christian Zionism and saying that that actually would be where modern Jewish Zionism began. Could you tell us what their aims and goals are?
Well, Christian Zionism has been around for quite a long time, and what's interesting about it is it's not just based in America, but the American movement's incredibly powerful, and to the point where many, many Christian Zionists are convinced that, in fact, they're often more Zionist than the Jews are, which is rather hilarious when you think about it. Their belief really is based on an apocalyptic rapture-style philosophy, which is that they're waiting for the second coming of the Messiah, Christ. And the only way that can really happen, or the only way that's more likely to happen, is if all the Jews essentially move to the Holy Land, to Israel, and they'll then, the ones who don't convert will basically be killed. It's a very, very bloody and brutal kind of understanding of religion and, frankly, of society. Why I think it's disturbing, and the increasingly close relationship between Christian Zionism and Jewish Zionism is, that they both believe in very, very different things. There's kind of a mutual hatred of Arabs often, which I think is fundamentally problematic. But the idea somehow that Christian Zionism loves Jews is, I think, is mistaken. They often, this movement, I think, has got a lot more traction, particularly since 9/11. It was powerful before then, but more so since 9/11, because Israel is framed by Christian Zionists and indeed by others as at the forefront of the so-called war on terror against Arabs and against Muslims particularly, as a profound hatred of Islam. So the relationship that's increasingly close between Christian Zionism and Jewish Zionism, I think, is very, very disturbing. And I'm in some ways torn about this. On the one hand, I think it's going to be a very, very ugly divorce one day to watch, which I'm perversely looking forward to, because they both want very, very different things. But at the same time, as growing numbers of young American Jews are turning away from Israel, Christian Zionism, which is far more extreme towards the Middle East, is gaining in support. A lot of the financial backing that Israel now receives, including in the occupied territories, funding which is illegal, is coming from Christian Zionism. So it's very destructive. And I worry this relationship's only going to get deeper and deeper.
Anthony, I wonder whether you could expand on that. You've said that the young Jews in the United States are moving away from the Israeli state. Why do you think that?
Some are. There's many studies that have been done in the last 5 years that suggest that a growing numbers of young Jews, I'm not saying the majority, it's not the majority at all, it's a sizable and growing minority, are increasingly disillusioned with Israel for two primary reasons. One, because intermarriage is growing up, that many Jews are marrying out of their religion, they're marrying Christians, atheists, Muslims, whatever, and the interest, therefore, is in being as fully engaged in Jewish life in Israel is decreasing. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, I think, many, many younger Jews, including some very, very, some of the most prominent, for example, bloggers in America, happen to be Jewish and are under 30 or under 35, are disillusioned with the idea that if you're Jewish, you must support Israel uncritically, which is very much how older generations who are close to the Holocaust believe. And I'm not saying for a second that you have this massive, you know, millions and millions of young Jews who are turning away from Israel. It's not the case. But you do find that many, many older Jews in the Jewish lobbies and organizations are worried that they don't look to younger generations and find the equal amount of love and vigor for Israel as happened, say, 20, 30 years ago. Now, how this all plays out in the end, I guess we don't know. But I'm optimistic at least to the extent that when a lot of young Jews, amongst many others, of course, see the recent Gaza onslaught or the occupation and they actually read what's going on, it's far easier now to observe what happens through online media, through Al Jazeera, through other sources. And the pictures don't lie. Occupation is occupation. It's ugly and it's brutal and it's getting worse. And they also see, which is another important consideration, they see the impotence of their own government. The American administration is in some ways making the problem worse. If anyone thought the Obama administration was going to improve the situation over there, they were delusional. That was never going to happen. And we've seen a year into his administration, the situation's only got worse. So I think a lot of young Jews either just turn away because they think the situation's hopeless, or they simply become more critical, which is seen as a threat to the Jewish community as a whole, which it shouldn't be, but it's seen that way.
Okay, and can I just ask, how does the Zionist state respond to Jews who openly denounce the state of Israel, and how does this affect their status with respect to the return of law? Right of return?
Well, it'd be fair to say that they're not particularly fond.
Yeah.
If you ask me how do they view it in a practical sense, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to the point where if you're asking, because of my public stance, amongst a number of other people, I should say that in this petition which we launched last week, people like Peter Singer, amongst others, who's a very, very prominent person, American ethicist, vegetarian, et cetera, have come out and signed the petition. So it's not just, those on the fringes anymore. I mean, Peter Singer's a pretty mainstream figure. I don't think there's any question they're going to block someone like me going to Israel or turn me away at the airport. I don't think it's going to be like that. But there's certainly a fear, I think, that this sort of thing catches on. It's not going to suddenly attract, the Jewish community as a whole. Far from it. There's too much of a sense of Zionism as a sort of religion, in a way, for that to happen. But I do think that what it shows is that there is a growing dissonant minority, which are getting stronger and stronger in their voices, which are saying that not in my name. And the right of return is but one of those things to challenge publicly.
Anthony, I wonder if you could actually comment on how difficult it is. I mean, I guess you're a journalist. We know how restrictive mainstream media is. How difficult is it for you to actually be active in solidarity for the Palestinian cause and, I guess, to bring awareness about what is happening in Israel? How restrictive is the environment here in Australia, and have you had any run-ins with, I guess, what we would call the Australian, Israeli lobby?
Well, I've had many. I've had dozens and dozens. For those interested, I wrote a book called My Israel Question a few years ago, which people can read. This came out in a new edition a few months ago. And in that book, I talk extensively about, not just about me, but about the relationship between Israel and the Israel lobby and the Australian government and the Israel lobby. It's a very close, very intimate, very incestuous relationship. The truth is that when I speak out about this issue, often I get smeared. I get often hate mail to my email. I get the occasional death threat. It's not that uncommon, sadly. And just speaking before, I won't name him, but I was speaking to a very senior journalist at one of the major news organisations about 10 minutes ago, who just said to me, in fact, that there are many journalists at his organisation, non-Jews, who will not touch the Palestine issue because they know if they do, they'll be attacked mercilessly by not just the Israel lobby, but Jews particularly, through the media, through email, and often they just think it's not worth it. So they self-censor. They self-censor. Mm-hmm. Not all, but many. And that's the kind of environment that exists. And again, there are many journalists who are an exception to that rule. But it happens. My experience has been over the years that there is a knee-jerk defensiveness about any criticism of Israel. I mean, a good example would be even in the last month. The story has come out, as all listeners will know, about the Mossad hit of the Hamas operative in Dubai. And it's emerged that there appears to be now four Australians who have had their passports forged for the purposes of this assassination. Now, it's got a lot of press. A lot of the press has been pretty bad for Israel, you'd have to say. But the Jewish community establishment and the Jewish press have pretty much come out and said two things. Firstly, well, it's not great that Israel did this to Australia, but really, even if they did, what's the problem anyway? Because he was a bad guy, he deserved to die. In other words, there is, even in a situation like this, where Israel is put on the back foot completely and is framed in a very bad way in the wider community, There's no humility. There's no sense of saying, this is really bad for us. This does not look good that we're essentially sanctioning state-sanctioned murder. That's what Israel is doing, and other states do as well, not just Israel. So even at this sort of time, there is an utter inability to see themselves as anything other than spokespeople for Israel. One of the things I think that people should be aware of, that the Israel lobby is not some independent figures. I'm not suggesting they're being paid by Israel. I don't have evidence for that. But what I do say is that they most certainly see themselves as being spokespeople for Israel. That's their job. Their job is to be uncritical supporters. It's sort of, in a way, the analogy is good. Like many, many years ago during the Cold War, there were many on the left, unfortunately, who were blind to the horrors of Stalin's Soviet Union. And it doesn't matter what information came out, how much of it came out, they denied it. They denied it, they denied it. And there is so much information now available to not just Jews, but everybody, about how Israel behaves, that I think the Israel lobby's effectiveness actually has decreased. Although their voices are still out there and they have a say and they have every right to be heard, there is, I think, a fear that there's growing numbers of Palestinians and at least some Arab commentators, not very many and not nearly enough, but there are some, and some questioning Jews who are getting airtime and getting in the media. Not as much as we would like, and it's still a struggle, and for all the reasons I've just outlined, but it's there. And therefore, they are no longer the only voices being heard. Mm. And that makes them unhappy, and it makes them upset, and it makes them very aggressive. But my view is, just deal with it. Yeah. It's the reality.
Anthony, just one last question. What is your advice to... I mean, I guess I come across a lot of Jewish students at the university that I attend, and we often talk about the Palestinian question, and there's a lot of confusion within, a lot of the Jewish students that I've come across. What is your recommendation as, I guess, a Jew? What do you recommend to a lot of, Jews that are trying to figure out what exactly is happening here?
Do you mean as in what they should read?
Or what they should read. I mean, I know that you belong to Independent Australian Jewish Voices. What is your general recommendation to the young Jewish people, I guess?
Well, look, I would recommend a few different things, and this is not just a view that confirm what I think. I think there's a number of things they could consume. They could, for example, read Israeli newspapers every day. A lot of them are in English. They can read Haaretz, which I think is one of the best. It's haaretz.com. It's a sort of liberal Zionist paper. It's not some crazy radical newspaper, far from it. But it has a lot of fascinating articles, analysis of what's going on, reports about what's happening in Gaza and the West Bank. It's a wonderful paper overall. They could read a number of books. Obviously, I'd recommend they read my book. But apart from that, they could also read books such as, I'm trying to think of a few off the top of my head, Norman Finkelstein, I'm a big fan of. He's an American historian. His stuff is wonderful. They could read people like even Benny Morris. Benny Morris has become a very conservative historian these days. And his history of 1948, which essentially confirmed that there was ethnic cleansing in Israel's birth, I think is very important, because there was an original sin there, so to speak, which has never been corrected. I think my view to people is to read widely. There are numerous Israeli human rights organizations you can read, Bet Selem, many others. There's a number of human rights groups in Gaza. People can consume, all this stuff is online now. There is no excuse anymore for people to say, we don't know what goes on. It's all of it, most of it is available. From the Israeli side, from the Palestinian side, very pro-Zionist, very anti-Zionist, it's all there. And I think, sadly, still, for many, many young Jews, which is often based on ignorance and what their parents and friends and family have told them, there is a knee-jerk defensiveness to support everything Israel does because it's Israel. And it's very anti-intellectual and doesn't really include a great deal of knowledge about the situation itself. Anybody who spent any time in the West Bank or Gaza, for that matter, where I was last year, will see what occupation means. And sadly, for many Jews from Australia and elsewhere who go to Israel, Palestine, they go to Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and they sort of think, what great cities. And they are great cities, but they're living in a bubble. They're two cities in a country. And 10 minutes down the road in the West Bank or in Gaza, a bit further down the road, you see with your own eyes what Israel has created. It's basically an apartheid one rule for Arabs and one rule for Jews. So I would urge people to open their eyes and to not be scared to go and visit the West Bank and see for themselves what's going on, and to read widely. all different views, and not to be scared of what they might find out.